You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. I'm sitting in for John Hockenberry today. Now, Adora, have you been watching the Olympics?
I did. I saw some of the volleyball. The Cubans, they really beat the Americans badly. Today, I guess it would be, yes. Now, it was a fascinating match.
Most of my viewing happened over the weekend where I became obsessed with men's gymnastics. The arm rings. Who knew? Now, we obviously weren't the only people who were looking at something beyond Michael Phelps' bid for Olympic gold. But if you wanted to get a better bead on some of the Olympic stories that you don't hear much about, there probably isn't anyone better than Ollie Williams. He is an Olympics blogger for the BBC, sports reporter who is, I believe, canoeing is one of the things he's focusing on. He has a story for us of a Thai weightlifter who won a gold medal after a fortune teller told her that she had to adopt a 32-letter name. Ollie Williams joins us now from London. Ollie, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that name.
Good morning, Catherine. I think you should try. Okay, I'll give it a go. Prabhawadi Jaron Ratana Tarakun.
Oh, well, sure.
Yeah, you believe me?
Ollie, that sounded so great.
It's common spelling, right?
Absolutely, it's the common spelling. It's as you find it, you know, across the States. That's it, exactly.
so tell us the story here, yeah.
You will love this. Okay, so until 2007, this lady was known as Champim Kantatian, which is a fairly normal name. At least it's a shorter name, which is usually a good thing. And last year, she was unhappy that she wasn't getting the results she wanted. She went to a fortune teller. Fortune teller said that, and this is a quote from her, "If I changed my name, I would go far. So I changed it because I wanted to go to the Olympics." What happens? A year later, she is a weightlifting gold medalist. I think there's a lesson in that for all of us. Maybe you could be, I don't know, Catherine Jaron Ratana Tarakun.
You can't make this up, Ollie. You can't make it up.
You can't make it up. We talked about beach volleyball earlier, by the way.
Yes, we did talk about beach volleyball.
The Cubans, they beat the U.S. team badly. They made them look like absolute amateurs.
And did you hear what happened to Kerry Walsh and her wedding ring?
Now, she, of course, is the great American beach volleyball player, and they play on sand, and I think that's a key component of the story you're about to tell us.
It's a key component indeed, yes. Lost the wedding ring in the sand while jumping up to block the ball in her opening match. She carried on regardless, very professional. At the end of the session, they sent an army of Olympic volunteers back to dig through the sand to find the ring, and somehow the organisers even managed to procure some metal detectors. It's incredibly convenient, I think, that you just happen to have metal detectors on standby for that sort of thing. They found some, eventually they got a beep, and a volunteer called Song Shendong dug the ring out of the sand to give back to her.
Ollie, you're bringing up something that I actually thought about when I was watching the beach volleyball, which is, how could anyone wear jewelry and compete in some of these games? I mean, unless she had a very modest ring, that would hurt.
Oh, you wait till you watch the track and field. In the triple jump, there's a British athlete called Phillips Iduwu who has bright pink hair and an incredible array of facial architecture. By which I mean piercings. It's a very posh way of saying piercings. But I think he might take a few of them out for that, because if you got that caught at the end of the triple jump...
Ouch.
Yeah.
Okay, now, I want us to talk about archery.
The archery.
Who knew? What? And for the people who haven't been keeping up on archery, could you explain, please, the drama, the tears, the emotion?
I certainly can. I mean, thousands of chancy supporters, thunder and lightning on a biblical scale, flooding, women's in tears. It can only be archery. I'll tell you what, this is actually a fascinating sport to watch. I guarantee if you've not watched archery before, it's more exciting than you think it is. But yeah, over the weekend, huge thunderstorms all over the Olympic green in Beijing. The tennis was almost completely washed out. Our reporter there said you'd need a submarine to leave the venue. The hockey carried on, which is very brave of them. But it turned out that the archery was the worst hit, so much so that our reporter, one of my fellow Olympic bloggers, a gentleman named Tom, had to hide underneath his desk to escape the thunder and lightning, because it's an outdoor venue. And they actually did carry on for quite some time playing in an incredible rainstorm. And I don't even want to think about how hard it is to shoot an arrow, about 75 yards in a thunderstorm.
Now, hang on a minute. Are these wooden arrows or are they metal? Because if you
think of Sherwood Forest, Robin Hood, it's nothing like that. have these massive, great big metal bows. They're called recurve bows, and I think they may even be carbon fiber.
But how can you do that when there's lightning?
you normally can't, which I think is why they eventually abandoned it. They waited for it to get bad enough, and then eventually they had to get everybody off. But it's a bit precarious. It adds a certain je ne sais quoi to an Olympic archery competition if you're having to face the elements at the same time.
You are posh. French and facial architecture. Now, quickly, empty seats at the Games.
Yeah, this is not good. Seems a lot of officials, media, corporate guest sponsors, they're just turning up for the occasional event now that they've got all these tickets. And that means that a lot of seats are being left empty at all kinds of venues. Beach volleyball is one of them, badminton's another. And it's a bit of a shame because the organisers have now had to ask their ticket holders to respect the events and not just turn up for the finals. Sydney, the venues were full to 94%. Athens got a lot of criticism for half-empty venues. It looks like the same is happening in Beijing. Scalping is illegal in China. The police are conducting sweeps to round up people who try. So it's really tough to get tickets, and it can be tough selling them if you don't want them. And then these stadia are left half empty. It's a shame.
Now, Ali, I know that we'll be talking to you again very quickly. What are you going to be watching tomorrow?
What am I going to be watching tomorrow? I'm a big canoeing fan, like you said at the start. The slalom canoeing, it's something I'd love to do. I've been out in a kayak once, maybe twice. The last time I got beached on some sand and had to be rescued by a man in a powerboat.
Yeah.
So it's fair to say I'm going to be watching the pros later today and tomorrow, and I'll be enjoying that.
Ollie, you'll never be beached with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That's Ollie Williams, a blogger on the Olympics for the BBC.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.